And it will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 12th chapter of Hosea, we hear, "But as for you, return to your God, hold fast to love and justice, and wait continually for your God." Lord God Almighty, in our daily efforts in seeking to be what you would have us be, we sometimes forget all the good that you provide us from your gracious hand. Make us confident in your promise, and make us move towards that which pursues your enduring justice, and may we have love for all your people. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schauf, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 56th day, Wednesday, April 19th, 2017.
Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and that the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guest. Introduction of Senator from Butler. What purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have a very special guest here today from Poplar Bluff. Some FFA members and the teachers that have accompanied him. I have Darla Nunn, Catherine Clark, Matt Blevins, all from Poplar Bluff chapter of the FFA, 22 students with them today.
Would the guest of the Senator from Butler please rise, and would the members of the Senate chamber please welcome them to this chamber. Introduction of guest. Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire the senator from San Francois.
Senator from San Francois, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Butler?
Yes, Mr. President, I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Well, before I proceed too much, if anybody else would like to introduce a guest, feel free to jump up and just let us know at any moment.
Senator, you are recognized for your inquiry.
Okay, thank you. Well, how'd you like golf day before yesterday?
You know, after 2 hours of sleep, my golf game was just a little bit rusty yesterday. But, you know, we got a chance to work all night on the good state's business. But a couple old farts like us, we decided we'd take advantage of a beautiful day and play a little golf yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I'm the guy, you know, that always says you can sleep when you're dead.
I've heard that adage. It's a good old farm thought process that a lot of work got done back in its day.
Your mic went off, I think.
My mic
there
went
you
off?
Go.
There we go. All right.
There you go. Well, anyway, I was just thinking about that night we spent here. Why did we get out of here, like 6 o'clock or something, a.m.?
I lost track of time. I just got up and went home when it was time to go. You know, we feel like we've got to take on some of these issues at the most inopportune time. We had to stay last week. Missed a lot of our holiday weekend last weekend by staying here.
Yep.
We stayed late the other night going through an issue that ended up with no resolution. I guess this morning we're still going to find there's no resolution. It's very, very frustrating. And then there's conversation that we're going to have to give up this weekend. We can't be about the budget because the budget's not prepared to go to tomorrow. So I'd like to know what's so serious that we're going to have to lose another weekend after losing 12 hours of our life the other night.
I don't know, but I thought maybe you and I would get up and just maybe shoot a few layups.
Yeah, you've been to a basketball game. I mean, the guys come out and do a little warm-up, pre-game warm-up.
Yeah, a little warm-up, a little pre-game.
And so, all things considered, we don't know what's coming up over the next day or two. But
yeah.
I think you and I want to be prepared. We want to be warmed up.
Yeah.
We want people to know that just because we're old guys,
yeah,
2 hours of sleep will not keep us from playing golf.
You think anybody else was playing golf at 9 o'clock that same morning?
It was fun. I mean, it was a beautiful day. You have to take advantage of opportunities when you get them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, I did send a text to the senator from Franklin.
He was still in bed, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was still. He just sent me back a text that had a bunch of Z's on it. I told him we were already on the fifth hole.
We told him he could catch up with us. We'd let him slide right in.
Yeah.
He may have to play in his pajamas. I mean.
Yeah. Well, I just thought maybe, you know, we might want to let everybody know that we're just kind of like shooting a few layups and shoot a few free throws. You know, do a few leg presses, pump a little iron, you know, get ready to go.
We look like we're pumping iron.
Yes. It depends on what the utensils are made out of.
It's the mental capacity and the desire, right? That's what it takes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As you know, you just never can gauge stamina by someone's looks like me.
Do you ever have a passion about an issue?
Ever have what?
Ever have a passion about an issue? Do you ever really educate yourself to a point that an issue is critically important to you that you're willing to fight for?
You know, I've dealt with people all over the world trying to put my brother and I out of business. And, you know, shooting these few layups and stuff, it's just kind of like layups, you know, to me.
You know,
I've had several issues I've been passionate about. You know, the unfair trade policies of the United States, trying to run all of our manufacturers out of business. And then we got all these wonderful pro-business bills, you know.
Pro-business bills?
Oh, yeah, pro-business bills. Yeah, we'll talk about that later today, I would suspect. And, you know, some of that tax stuff and all that. So we'll be talking about that later on today. But
you and I have been through some business experiences that's required an intense level of negotiation, intense level of resistance, intense level of fighting for what we believe is right to make sure our businesses are protected.
Yeah.
I understand the House is going to be picking up Senate Bill 43, which is, I think, is one of the most important pieces of legislation we get done this year to protect businesses. Those are battles worth fighting for. Those are battles that affect the entire state and all businesses of the state.
Senate will come to order. Senate will come to order so the senators can hear one another in the debate.
Thank you, Mr. President, because we're talking about some really important stuff here. We're talking about jobs and business and families and...
And we're talking about things that have a positive effect on businesses all across the state. It's not picking winners and losers in regards to which businesses get to succeed and which businesses have to pay more money. And that's what gets frustrating sometimes in this building. We talk way too much about special interest.
That's right.
A special individual or a special
that's
company
right.
That's going right. to get some special consideration, and everybody else is going to have to eat the dust from it.
Yep. Well... there may be others that want to introduce some special guests. Let's sit down for a moment. You want to?
Well, if they want to introduce special guests, we'll be happy to concede that. But I think, you know, it's very important that it's understood that this is a serious last 3.5 weeks or 3 weeks and a day that we have before this body. And there is a – have you seen the docket? Have you seen how many bills are on this calendar right now?
No, hang on a minute. My desk is so messy I can't find it. Oh, here it is.
Looks like you purged yourself there a little bit.
My desk stays like that, Sam.
We need to really take consider the valuable bills that is on this calendar that our colleagues want to get dealt with. We've had some issues that's had 2-3 bites at the apple and that are being considered again. I think it's very, very serious conversation that we have that we really evaluate what comes before this body that is worthy of our time to be discussed and debated on this floor.
Yeah. Well, I just thought maybe, I think maybe we ought to sit down just for a moment or two, and we'll get back up here in a second.
All right, I'll be prepared.
There's some special guests here that need to be introduced.
Anytime you want to visit with, let me know.
Well, thank you. I'll just keep my microphone on. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guest. Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To speak on a point of personal privilege.
Senator from Buchanan requests a point of personal privilege. Senator, you may proceed.
Mr. President, we are about to enter into the budget process. My understanding now is that the plan is that we're going to go ahead and put the managed care into the budget, and we're going to book $50 million worth of savings out of the core. That's the plan. Now, I want to remind everyone what the Constitution says. It says, no money shall be withdrawn from the state treasury except by warrant drawn in accordance with an appropriation made by law, nor shall any obligation for that payment of money be incurred unless the Commissioner of Administration certifies it for payment and certifies that the expenditure is within the purpose as directed by the General Assembly of the appropriation, and that there is in the appropriation an unencumbered balance sufficient to pay for it. Now, on May 1, which is no more than 9 days from today, we have three managed care companies that have signed contracts, which were signed in October, to start delivering care to 750,000 Missourians starting May 1. But we won't complete the appropriations process to pay for that until May the 5th, and who knows how long the governor will take to sign that appropriation. And there is a reason for this being in the Constitution. It's to stop the crap that is happening today from happening. You are not supposed to start delivering services before the appropriation is made. Now, the contract was conditioned such that they pushed the payment for May into July. That way, they could get us locked in before the appropriation starts. Now, the governor knows this. The governor is complicit in this. He knows full well that this is unconstitutional. He knows it. And what the House did was the House said, well, we need to book some more savings. So what they did was, instead of having it prorated down to where we're paying for May of 2018, in June of 2018, they have changed it now to where we're paying for May of 2018 in July of 2018, thereby pushing the appropriation permanently into the next year, making this a true one-time savings. Now, we have heard in Appropriations Committee, because I personally asked Director Tidball, is there any money in the appropriation for fiscal year 17 to pay for the services that will be delivered in fiscal year 17, which starts May 1 and goes to June the 30th? And the answer was clearly no. There is no money in fiscal year 17's appropriation to pay. So come May 1, they will be, as what the Constitution says, they will be obligating for that payment of money. They will be obligating. They will be providing services under the contract. Now, let's talk about how that contract looks. The contract is to pay the managed care companies a certain amount per member per month. Per member per month to provide all of the care that those moms and kids get. That's what it says. It's a certain dollar value per member per month. And we know exactly how many people are in the program now, and we can pretty well calculate how many will be on the program as of May of 2018. We know that. And we know that there is a federal law that says that they have to be paid an actuarially sound rate. Every member in this body knows that. They have to be paid an actuarially sound rate. In fact, we put an extra line in the budget to increase the payment to the managed care so that we can guarantee that they are paid an actuarially sound rate. Now, you may not know how this works, but actuaries give us a range. And they say, the range is from this dollar value to that dollar value. And guess what? Every year, the state picks the lowest number in the range. You know how I know this? Because I'm part of an insurance company, and we have an actuary, and they give us a range. And I have asked this question to the director. Where do we pick on the value? Do we pick in the middle? No. We pick at the end of the range. So we are paying the managed care companies the minimum amount that we can per member per month. Now, this is a simple calculation. This doesn't take a whole lot of brain power. You take that amount of money per member per month, you multiply it times the number of people, and that's how much the managed care companies get paid every month. That's simple. A child could do that calculation on his or her little iPad or iPhone. Now, I do not know how you subtract $50 million from the core. How do you do that? How do you subtract $50 million from the core? Not only that, but we're going to budget, we are contemplating budgeting to pay the managed care companies 2 months in arrears permanently when the contract that we now have signed as of October says they'll get paid 1 month in arrears, which is the way it's always been done. At the end of this coming year. So not only are we breaking the Constitution, but we are breaking the contract that's already signed through our appropriation process, creating one-time money. Where are we going to get the money next year? $50 million. Where are we going to get that? Are we going to take it from education, transportation? Where are we going to get the money? Is this the way we want to budget? Breaking the Constitution? I mean, I got to ask, are we all a bunch of sheep? That's why I'm wearing my sheep tie today. Are we all a bunch of sheep? Are we all, like, do we have, like, groupthink going on here? Is it mass hysteria? Is that what's going on here? Does not anybody see what I'm talking about? I mean, Governor, we've got 750,000 people who are about 9 days from now to be on the program. We don't have the waiver from the federal government. We know that the federal government has to approve the contracts for managed care. And we are going to budget and say, no. We're just going to bet money that they're going to approve this contract, which now pays the managed care company a month later permanently. I got to ask, don't the managed care companies already have contracts with all the physicians and hospitals and other providers that are going to be providing care to those 750,000 Missourians? Don't those people and those hospitals and providers rely on their contract with the managed care company, and now we're going to pay the managed care companies a month later? How is that going to affect their cash flow? You've got to ask this question to yourself. Is this the way we want to do business? And why are we doing this? Listen, I want to tell you. You remember the scene in The Watchmen, when Rorschach says, you may think that I'm locked in here with you, but you're locked in here with me. I want you to remember that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guest. Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to continue my little dialogue with my senator from San Francois.
Senator from San Francis, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Butler?
Yes, I do.
Look at that.
Senator from Butler, you may proceed.
You seen the crowd scatter?
If I had a hammer, you remember that song?
Yes, Peter, Paul, and Mary.
I'm not going to sing any of it. If I had a hammer, the senator from the 23rd would have got hammered. But at any rate, you know, the other night, I don't remember how many hours it was. All I know is daylight when we were getting home. And I said, this looks like a really good day to play some golf. I mean, I got to think, we're already up.
Well, you know, I remember you saying as we got back to the house, you said, you know, I could have a little breakfast and I can head straight to the course right now. And I just kind of looked at you and said, Doug, give me 2 hours. Just 2 hours.
I didn't give you two, though, did I?
No, an hour and a half.
An hour and a half. I had the coffee made.
Was made, ready to go, and beautiful sun.
Yeah.
And the golf course was beautiful.
It was great.
They Eagle Knoll, they do a good job with their course.
It was a great golf course. Very reasonable. Friendly folks out there. Very, very nice. We had a great day. You know, I wish we had more days. I got to thinking, I keep a trash bag over my golf clubs because they've been here going on 5 years.
How many times you had that trash bag off?
3 times. In 5 years, 3 times.
Yeah.
You know, there's just absolutely no telling how many hours that has not, that this has been absolutely lost.
A waste of our time.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, and I've been known to say time is the most valuable thing you have.
It is. It is.
And your health. And if you don't have your health, you don't have much time.
And I understand that there was a proposal out there, and we'll just throw it out there. But, you know, we spent until 6 o'clock in the morning debating the circuit breaker bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, from one of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, it was mentioned that an offer was out there to cut the program in half and phase out the rest of it over the next 5 years. You know, I think that's something a lot of us could agree to and sign off on and believe would be a good way. I don't know why we always have to get to a cliff and jump off or have to get to a cliff and jump up. I mean, phasing a program seems to be the most logical way to deal with some of these, especially when we're talking about seniors and people that's going to have their lives change and their livelihoods change in such a dramatic way. But I just throw that out there because I think that's been part of the conversation. My understanding is that there's no deal. And so, again, that umpteen hours of our life are gone without any net result.
Well, this is our fifth year. You know, this is our fifth year. And, you know, we've sat very patiently. You and I have not taken up much floor time. But that will probably change here in the next few weeks.
We're
probably going to make up a little extra floor time. And, you know, just wanted to apologize to our colleagues ahead of time. You know, what happened to some of the some of our other colleagues last Thursday, you know, that had deference to a bill. And, you know, everybody wanted to get home. Matter of fact, I didn't get to go home at night.
Do you think it's a little bit of bullying to take and put a bill out there that contentious when we have members of our own caucus that, you know, we're putting them in a bind and forcing them to have to deal with an issue on a time when they were expected to get off? They had families waiting for them.
Right.
And they could not accommodate that because we did not manage our time. You and I, as business owner, time management is the most important thing that we have in life.
Time
is the most valuable thing. Time is the most valuable thing. Far more greater than money or anything that money can buy, because time is your time with your family. Time is used to spend to deal with these issues on the Senate floor in a manner that's professional and successful. But when it starts getting leveraged by using it to make people's lives uncomfortable because you're going into their family time, and that is being used as a leverage or as a tool to bully the membership into dealing with something, that's when we're out of step with reality and we're misusing our power and our responsibility.
That's right. And I think the senator from the 5th needs to get to her desk really bad.
She's enjoying a cup of coffee this morning.
You used to enjoy the conversation? Okay. Well, you know, I'm very sensitive to seniors, kids, folks that are disabled, and those that can't help themselves. I'm very sensitive to that, those people groups, very sensitive to it. And, you know, we need to make sure that we do everything we can for that.
Well, that's our responsibility up here. Our number one responsibility is to take care of the most vulnerable in this body. Our social programs, our education programs, those are the key components of our responsibility up here in this body.
You know, we could talk a while on education, like maybe till noon.
We can do that.
Huh?
Education is a passion of both.
I'm thinking, the student from 14th, I'm getting a thumbs up on education.
You know, I really appreciate her passion for education and for her district, and we've had opportunity to have conversation about taking care of the needs of her kids and being responsible. Social promotion is not an acceptable avenue, and we believe in that. We want to support her in that. There's issues that we really need to deal with in a way and give it some floor time so that we can have that debate.
You know, I'm feeling really good about the lack of floor time that I've taken in 4.5 years because I've reserved it all up. I have reserved it all up, and, you know, I don't put many bills out on the floor. Everybody keeps talking about, well, you know, we got to have floor time for bills. And then I thought a couple weeks ago we weren't even going to be hearing any more Senate bills. And I guess we just get misinformation all the time.
No more Senate bills would come.
We get information, bad information. Do what?
We were told that point blank.
Yeah.
No more Senate bills coming to the
floor. Yeah. And what happened to the deal where you pick out your bill and you get to bring it up and all that kind of stuff?
Everybody got one bill, and then we start all over based upon seniority.
That
kind of went out the window.
Yeah. You think you would have been successful in business if you ran your business like that?
No, my credibility would go down the hill pretty quick. And credibility is the most important thing you can have in any position in life.
Yeah. Well, you want to talk education for a couple hours? Or?
You know, Senator, I think we've got our point across that you and I, doesn't matter what people may think of our age or who we are, that we have the stamina and we have the willpower. You have used your time on this floor very prudently. You don't get up frivolously and talk about issues. When we talk about something, it's going to be because we have a belief and a sincere feel that the public is being taken advantage of on some of these issues, and we're willing to speak about it and take the time it needs.
That's right.
And so I'm tired of dancing around some of these issues. I'm ready to take on the challenge and just throw it out there point blank and not mince any words.
Hey, somebody throw something on my desk. Oh. Senator from Buchanan, that's probably some good reading material right there. I'm going to leave it on my desk because I don't normally have stuff on my desk that I don't like. So I got two things on my desk now. There's going to be something else on my desk later on somewhere in the next few days. It's going to be a red folder.
I know you got a blue folder, a yellow folder, and a red folder. And when the red folder comes out,
I have a green folder.
What's that?
I have a green folder.
A green folder?
Yeah, I'm kind of okay with stuff that's in a green folder. But when I bring my red, when you see my red folder on my desk, it's easy to see my red folder on my desk because there's generally nothing on my desk except a little placemat here. And I have a couple things over here on the side normally. And then, you know, if I'm gone for a little bit, you know, listening from my office, all the hours and hours and hours of time, I get these piles of stuff on my desk and I come in, look it all over, and it heads for the recycling bin.
You know, we obviously we're going to talk about the issues and why they are right or why they're wrong. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about undue influence, pay to play on some of these issues.
Pay to play. Well, we're going to be talking about it. That's in my red folder.
That's part of your red folder.
My red folder.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to expose your red folder.
Yeah, well, my red folder's not here right now, Senator. I didn't need it this morning. It's not even in my drawer. My coffee, my phone, my ink pen, and my microphone is all I need nowadays.
But I think, Senator, we have gotten our point across of how important some of these future issues are to us and how much we're willing to make a stand for those issues and make a point and a clear statement. In business, you can't, if you blink, you lose.
Hey, you know, I wouldn't mind talking, you know, an hour on some of the topics that Senator from Buchanan's been talking
about. You know, managed care and how it was appropriated last year. We can have that conversation.
Yeah.
We can talk about bills that get an inordinate amount of time on this floor when it's not a caucus priority.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, we've had stuff here as caucus priorities, and I'm a member of the caucus. I didn't know there were caucus priorities. It's amazing.
Kind of. Huh? And it's a surprise to us.
Oh, I mean, it is a surprise. You know, we're not part of the inner circle, Senator. I hate to bust your bubble.
Well,
have you been thinking that for some reason?
It gets a little frustrating when things are popping up, and as part of the caucus, you would have thought you had had heads up on that conversation.
Well, you know how it is. You know, I like what Senator from Buchanan said a while ago. You know, you think I'm in here with you, you're in here with me. I really like that. That was awesome. That was great. Well, anyway, I'm going to set my warm and fuzzy self down for a little while. And because Senator from the 5th does need something really bad from her desk. She don't just stand there for no reason.
Well, we need to defer to the lady or the senator and allow her to her desk. And we appreciate that. And Senator, appreciate the inquiry, and I look forward to further visits.
But we got some important committee stuff here we need to probably get to.
That's probably true. So we'll concede to that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the opportunity. Spend a little time. The
introduction of guests. Introduction. Senator from 5th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to inquire the Senator from the 34th.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 5th?
Yes.
Senator, you may proceed.
Good morning, Senator. How are you? How you
doing? Good
morning. Yeah. So the influence, psychology of persuasion, this is what you just dropped?
I just thought that I was reading from this yesterday, and I thought that the members might like to see what it was that I was reading from. It was chapter 2 of this book.
So do you think that you have mastered the art of persuasion?
Oh, no. Okay. I would never think that.
Because you know, I am still not persuaded by, you know, your argument with managed care. And that's why I wanted to just kind of talk to you a little bit about it. Real briefly, I truly understand the fight that's in the senator from the 14th, because people in her district, they are dying. You know,
yep.
They are dying at an alarming rate. Cancer and things of that sort. But with you, I'm just trying to figure out the logic and the rationale behind your adamant opposition to managed care. Now, I've been listening to you, and I heard that there were 750 people that are, I don't know if the 750 or 500 that actually applied or received the managed care as of April, January to April.
Well, it's May 1, Senator.
I mean, May 1.
And the thing is, there's about 500,000 in the I-70 corridor, which includes your district. And now the managed care expansion area will be about 250,000.
So what is wrong with women, pregnant women, and those that are indigent, what's wrong with them receiving managed care in the manner in which they're receiving it under the particular contract?
Well, the thing is that managed care covers moms and kids, not necessarily pregnant women and just poor people. It's moms and kids with incomes below a certain amount. And the thing is that we as a state are providing care to them now in the I-70 corridor under managed care and in the outstate area under fee-for-service. That's
okay,
how we're providing it now.
If I'm correct, what you're saying is that managed care, they're not providing services for pregnant women and foster care children?
Well, my understanding is that those are covered by a different... pregnant women and the CHIPS program and all, they are covered. I don't know if they're covered under managed care or not.
But they are. And under the CHIPS program, along with, you have the TANF and you have CHIP, the CHIP program.
Yeah, so those kids in the I-70 corridor, they're probably assigned to managed care also.
Yeah, and so what you're trying to do would totally bring about chaos for those individuals. How would you solve the chaos that would occur as a result of your proposal?
Oh, well, there, I'm not trying to bring about chaos.
But that's what would happen, though.
No. It's the exact opposite, Senator.
How so?
The chaos is going to occur when the people who now have a doctor get forced to switch, and the networks, the provider networks in the outstate area aren't even set. Nor are they in the I-70 corridor, for that matter.
What about those ones that are already under the contracts? What about those ones that have already applied?
Okay.
And with your proposal, I don't see how it won't be chaotic.
Would you like me to explain? Because you have people that have already enrolled. Would you like me to explain?
Of course. I'm just trying to
figure
this out.
Well, so here's the thing. Right now in the I-70 corridor, you've got three managed care companies that are providing services to those people, and they have doctors, and they go to hospitals, and all the networks are established. And should the contract, the new contracts for the statewide managed care not take effect, those existing contracts would remain in place. And all of the people in the I-70 corridor would just simply continue seeing the doctors and providers that they see now.
Okay. All right, well, I'll take that from you. But let's say, what would happen when the contracts with the different providers, right? Let's say you have the managed care and then the contractors. What if the contracts are defaulted on? I mean, what if they totally, wouldn't that go into a major lawsuit or whatnot if those individuals that have already signed contract to provide managed care and then you say, no, you cannot provide that? So,
okay, let me
because if I sign a contract with you
right.
and then you default on that contract, then I'm taking you to court.
Okay.
I'm going to take you to court in a major way.
Well, that's
and so
fine.
How would that impact the bottom line?
Okay.
How would that impact funding from the state level? Would they take the state to court? Who would they take to court?
Let me answer that. May I? Okay.
Do you understand what I'm asking, though?
Yes. What you're saying is that if we say to the managed care companies that are contracted to provide statewide managed care starting
right.
May 1, we're not going to appropriate this money, that you're saying that they will sue the state and say that we defaulted on our contract. Is that correct?
That's what I'm worried about.
Okay, now let me answer why you shouldn't worry.
Okay.
Here is an excerpt from the three contracts. I distributed this to your desk. And it says, the contractor understands and agrees that funds required to fund the contract must be appropriated by the General Assembly of the State of Missouri for each fiscal year included within the contract period. The contract shall not be binding upon the state for any period in which funds have not been appropriated, and the state shall not be liable for any costs associated with termination caused by the lack of appropriation. That's in their contract.
Okay, so thanks for giving me that information.
Now, there's
Hold on,
more.
Let me ask you another question.
May I tell you a little bit more?
Hold on, let me ask you another question here.
Well, I want to tell you a little bit more to more completely answer that. A few years ago, there was a company that was providing NEMT, non-emergency medical transportation. I think it was called, I can't remember the name of it, Logisticare. And this same thing happened where their contract got terminated by virtue of we didn't appropriate money. Logisticare took the state of Missouri to court saying, hey, we had all these expenses and you didn't appropriate the money. And the state of Missouri won because this language was in that contract too. In fact, this language has to be in all the contracts. And the state of Missouri won, so there is no concern about the three managed care companies suing the state and winning. And plus, it doesn't cost us to go to court because we got Attorney General Hawley sitting over there. He can go to court for us. It doesn't cost
okay.
us.
All right, so now, I mean, because you're really giving me some good information here. So right now, what you're saying that the state, we are not funding managed care right now?
We are
funding managed care under the appropriation for last year, that for the current fiscal year, we're paying for managed care in the I-70 corridor.
That's so from January till when they start with when the enrollment began in January, and it ends April 3rd.
No, it ends June 30th. For the I-70 corridor, we are paying for managed care through June 30th in the contract in the appropriation for 2017.
Well, let's talk about the 2017 for May. So last year, the legislation was told to start the date on May the 1st.
No, in the appropriation, it actually says July 1st. If you read the bill, the House Bill 2011, which we passed last year, kind of got forced down our throats.
I would like to see that.
Online.
Get it for me.
You can get it on your phone. You can get it online. You can get it.
So what you're trying to do, tell me what exactly is you're trying to do. Because, I mean, I've been listening to you.
What I'm saying is that we have put managed care into the budget for next year.
For funding.
For the expansion, for putting it in outstate Missouri. We're not talking about your district.
Yeah.
We're talking about all the rural areas.
Yeah, what's wrong with that, though?
Well, first of all, the way it's being done is unconstitutional.
How is it being done?
Well, what we're doing is we're putting all of those people on managed care starting May 1.
Right. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is that we will not have appropriated money to pay for that care until after May 1.
Well,
does that concern you, Senator?
Well, you just said that even if we don't have money to pay for it, then we don't have to go into that contract if we don't have money to pay for it.
Okay, well, I've got to ask.
But then you just told me that if we didn't have money to pay for it, then we don't have to be bound by that contract. And I don't think that they will even want a contract with us if we don't have the money for it.
Well, let me tell you.
So what's the big problem here?
Okay, well,
here's the answer. I mean, I don't see the problem.
Well, Senator, 9 days from now is May 1. Today's the 20th of April, right?
Right.
So 9 days from now is May the 1st. And on May the 1st, the care shifts from fee-for-service in all of those outlying areas to the managed care companies. And all of the people who have providers and hospitals that they go to and specialists at hospitals, now, on May 1, 9 days from now,
how many people would that be?
9 days from now, they will all be locked into these plans.
How many people?
250,000.
250,000 will be locked into that plan.
Right.
Okay.
You're suggesting is...
Hold on, son. I'm trying to follow you here. Just wait a minute.
Okay, well, what you're...
Bear with me because... Yeah, I'm just trying to follow you. So what you're saying, by May 1, they have shifted from one care to managed care.
From fee-for-service
fee-for-service
in the outstate area over to managed care, right.
Okay, and so being that they have shifted over to managed care, which I don't see a problem with that, you're saying that we don't have the funding to do it?
That's correct, Senator. The funding has not been appropriated to pay for it.
Once we put the monies in the budget, can they go back then and send an invoice to, they can they provide the services until we actually fund the services?
I'm sure they will, but it'll be illegal. It'll be the misappropriation of state funds, Senator. Because the Constitution clearly says that we will not obligate the state until the money has been appropriated. That's what it says. And you know, you as a senator and me and him, we're going to be in the unenviable position of having to vote for something that the gun is being held to our head because these 250,000 people will have already been started on the plan. And if we don't appropriate the money, then surely will we be causing chaos then.
But we will appropriate the money. So
Well, what if we didn't? Are you saying that we have to?
I'm saying that we will.
Well, see,
and I'm saying that so being that we will appropriate the funds, I don't understand what the big deal is.
Okay, well, here's the big
deal. Because it's not like we're not going to appropriate the funds for those individuals that are in need of those services that have transferred to managed care on May 1.
Well, but you understand something.
And I heard you talk about the feds. You said the feds, they haven't made their obligation.
Right. There are several things that have to happen before May 1. First of all, we have to have a signed waiver from CMS.
Where does it say that at? I mean, that we have to have it. I mean, is that?
You sit on the Appropriations Committee with me, and you heard me ask Director Tidball if we have to have a signed waiver in advance. And she said yes. Now, you were there.
A signed waiver from the feds?
Yeah, it's called a waiver. And we also have to have a signed state plan amendment. We have to have an approved state plan amendment under our contract with the federal government. Not only that, but the contracts with the managed care company have to be approved. And what we're doing in our appropriation is forcing the department to renegotiate the contract that's already been signed. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that that's highly unethical to do that to a government contractor who has already agreed with the state to receive a certain amount. I mean, like, what we're doing is we're asking them to accept less than an actuarially a sufficient amount to pay for the care. And you know
you're being pessimistic about the whole deal. Because you don't believe that we're going to get the waiver. You don't believe that we're going to have the funding.
I believe the
waiver will come down.
You misunderstood. Oh, I believe we'll get the waiver. Listen, Governor Greitens has been traveling to Washington multiple times. You don't think President Trump's going to give him? He's going to direct them. Go ahead and give them the waiver. Oh, yeah. It'll hum the day before.
But
know what else? They, by law, have to have an adequate network, and it has to be certified by the Department of Insurance. Well, let me ask you this. Who does the Department of Insurance take their marching orders from?
But what do you think about... okay, because we passed a bill, and I didn't hear you, like, getting really all up in arms about that either. So we passed a bill, and you clearly just stated it, that we cannot put monies towards anything. We cannot implement anything that the money's not, you know, appropriated for.
It's the Constitution.
So, okay, let's talk about voter ID. We specifically stated that voter ID will not take place until the funds are appropriated.
I agree. It says that. In fact,
why don't you champion that cause? I mean, what's wrong with championing that cause? Because that's a good cause to champion.
You know,
when you have individuals that are being required to have an ID without the funding being appropriated in the budget. And the funds are not fully appropriated in the budget.
Then I got to answer that for you, Senator. That money to appropriate the funds to pay for that is in the budget now. And there won't be any elections under which the voter ID law takes effect until after that appropriation is made.
It's not fully. I mean, the amount that the Secretary of State requested to implement voter ID is not in the budget.
No,
it's not. That's what he's upset about.
Well, then here's the answer to you. I believe that the court will say that you cannot implement voter ID if it is inadequately funded. I think that the court will do that. But you know what? The court doesn't have any say in this deal. This is all the governor making a decision to put 250,000 people illegally on managed care. This is what's going on here.
And I'm about to close here.
It's on the governor.
It's on
the governor today. The governor is the one. He's the only one that can stop this.
I think he's on the right side of the issue, though. But you know, you mentioned and you said time and time again that the managed care costs money is because of the taxes, the managed tax, something like that.
Now you're switching gears.
You talk about the managed care taxes.
Would you like me to explain that to you?
I thought the ACA would provide those taxes.
Okay, now here's the thing. Under the Accountable Care Act, the Managed Care, Affordable Care Act, whatever it is, the ACA. I mean, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it.
Obamacare? Stop it.
Anyway, on January the 1st, and I think it was 2014, but it might have been 2013. Anyway, on January 1 of a certain year, then all managed care companies, including ones that provide Medicaid, have to start paying 2.718% in tax on their gross premiums. 2.7%. Okay, well, see, several years ago when I was in the House, I was the handler of a bill, and it was the MoHealth Net Reform Bill. And at that time, the managed care companies wanted to put everybody on managed care. They think, oh, managed care is the greatest thing. But, you know, there is data that shows that managed care is not necessarily the greatest thing, that it doesn't actually save money. And so what we did was we put into the bill that we, the state of Missouri, would do a study, and we created the MoHealth Net Oversight Committee.
But you,
which, now, and so the MoHealth Net Oversight Committee was supposed to get this study and look at it and decide, is it cheaper to put people on managed care or on fee-for-service?
But, Senator, you know and I know, while doing studies or researching studies, you can find a study that, you know, tell you it's right.
We're
you
paying
can find a study,
study
that tells you it's
no,
wrong.
No,
whatever argument you own, you can find that study.
We said that we would pay for the study, so we engaged Mercer to do the study. And the study came back, and it was a four-year period, and over that four-year period, they said that in the I-70 corridor, which includes your district, that it saved the state 1.7% on average. That's what they said. Now, they made a lot of assumptions to get to that, but the funny thing was that the last day of the study, during the four-year period that they looked at, was the day before the 2.718% managed care tax went into effect.
Well, the
that if that study is correct and then they've been saving us 1.7%, the very next day it's costing us 1% because we got to pass through and pay that 2.718% tax. It is actually costing us money in the I-70 corridor, 1% now.
So, according to my understanding, the managed care tax that you're talking about, okay, the Affordable Care contained a proposal for that, right? For the managed care tax premium. That never came to fruition.
Oh, yeah. They paid.
No, it didn't. It never came into fruition. Matter of fact, I have some information here. Hold on. The Affordable Care Act contained that managed care tax premium given to the health care plans. It never happened. It was denied and delayed several years.
Hey, you have heard me ask Director Tidball and others in committee about that. And I was told that, yes, that tax is passed through. In fact, you've heard her say that the Mercer study took into account the 2.718% tax. So nobody has ever denied that we pay that tax. I mean, it's never been denied to me in committee, and you've been.
Now, I don't think they did the research on
well,
that.
Well, you know something,
the
Senator?
I
just want to tell you, I think that we should make our budgetary decisions based upon truth. Whatever the truth is, I want to know it so that I can make the right decision.
Again, I'm going to close out. I do believe that the senator from the 14th, you know, her argument is strong about what her conviction is and why she feels the way she feels, because people are dying.
Yeah, people are dying.
Now, with this situation here, people are not dying. We are not losing money. And it's your philosophical view that will cause people to be impacted.
But wait a second, Senator. Now, did you know that in the Mercer study, They looked at the quality of care under six metrics, and that fee-for-service beat out managed care in five out of the six metrics. And now you can make the argument that if they're not doing as well, maybe people are dying. Maybe the quality of care of your constituents in the I-70 corridor right now isn't as good as the quality of care in outstate Missouri.
Well, you know what?
Because we got a study that showed it.
The people that I talk to, this is not a study, this is real life. The people that I talk to who's on managed care, guess what? They love it.
Senator,
and they talk about the service provided to them in a way that they have never had service provided.
I just got to ask.
Under managed care.
I just got to ask, is Centene located in your district?
Centene is not located in my district.
No.
Centene is located in the Clayton area.
I didn't know.
Huh?
I didn't know. Are any of the managed care companies located in
your district? Why did you ask me that question?
I just want to know. I mean, is they part of your
constituents? Why did you want to know that, though?
But I would like to know if they are a constituent of yours. That's all.
Oh, no, they're not a constituent. But many of those individuals who are under the managed care, I have many of them that are providing.
They love their managed care?
Oh, my God.
Well, then I've got to ask. You know, since Aetna, which is the managed care company for the great bulk and majority of the people in your area, they're losing their contract now to go to the statewide. All those people that like Aetna, they're not going to have it anymore. They're going to have a different one. Did you know that?
As long as they are providing the same services that my constituents are receiving right now, I don't have a problem with that.
Well, you know, all of the hospitals across the state, they're worried about this. You know why? Because the contract says that the managed care company gets paid a month later than normal. So that means that, I don't know where they're going to float $200 million, but if the managed care company isn't getting their money for an extra month, do you think the hospitals in your district and all of the they're going to get their money on time? They're not going to get their money on time.
That doesn't mean my constituents won't get their services on time.
Well, how do you know?
Well, I know that.
You know that the doctors and the
FOA team... Well, you think that the doctors are just that evil where they would just give up providing services for individuals that need it because they didn't get their money on time?
All of those providers are now going to get paid a month later. You don't think that's going to stress them and maybe put a few of them out of business?
I don't believe in that hypothetical. I think that the doctors who provide services to the most needy are caring people. And I don't think just because they didn't get their monies a month, if they get the money a month later, that they're just going to drop services for all of those people that need to serve.
Does it bother you that we're violating the Constitution by doing this?
Well, it bothers me that if voter ID passed, we would be violating the Constitution. So, yeah, that bothers me there.
I have to agree with you on voter ID. If we didn't meet the requirements of the law, the voter ID thing should not go into effect. But this is a clear violation of the Constitution, having the services start to be delivered on May 1 when we haven't appropriated any money until after that. That's a violation right there.
So who is it that you don't like? I mean, is it like the contractor that's providing the services that you don't?
You know what it is that I like? I like the people of Missouri having an open and honest contracting process, and I like having the people of Missouri get well taken care of and not doing things just to benefit the managed care companies. You know what I call that? There's a word for it. Corruption.
So you're going to have an amendment. I hear you're going to have an amendment that is going to strip out.
I'm going to offer it, but, you know, do I think it'll pass? I don't know. I hope so. I hope the members of this body listen to me and they go, we can't do that. That's wrong. We should not be doing that.
I have that same conviction about voter ID. I could be with you if you had that same type of conviction, that same type of drive and fire in your heart and mind about what's happening with voter ID. You can't pick and choose what is constitutional and what's not constitutional and which one you're going to stand up for.
Senator, I will stand with you for both. And did you know that I worked behind the scenes with the senator from the 8th to ensure that no person gets disenfranchised under that voter ID law? You know who made sure of that? It was me.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guests. Senator from St. Francis, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, can I inquire of the senator from Cole?
Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from St. Francis?
Senator, Mr. Floor Leader, just would like to ask if you could tell us what our agenda is for tomorrow. Why are we staying an extra day?
Well, as we talked about a week or two ago, maybe, when we start talking about this, the budget needs time. The budget committee is going to meet all day or most of the day today. They've also asked that they might possibly need time tonight and tomorrow morning. So because we got the budget late, that was the whole intention of and we communicated that with everybody. Physically went and looked, including you and other members in the face, and said, we may have to do this, and we'll send a note out as well. And it's based on our fine appropriations chairman and his committee needing some time to work through that issue.
But the rest of the body doesn't need to be here tomorrow, though, right?
Well, we have to
not be able to debate.
I think we have to be in session, or we have to be... I'm not sure how the technical piece of that works, but yes, the if they're going to meet tomorrow morning, I think we can't be adjourned. I'm not sure. There was a reason why we had to be here. And then we thought, since we had an extra day this week, and this is why we communicate to everybody again, I looked everybody in the eye and physically told them we would likely be here on Thursday night and Friday morning, that Friday would be more like a Thursday where we'd go in at 10, try to get done sometime in the afternoon. So that budget would have a chance to meet, and in case there was issues relating to what they have to do to put together. At one point in time, we thought, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, that the budget might even be ready to come to the floor on Friday. But that's not the case.
I mean,
that window has passed.
Right.
It'll be next week.
So tomorrow, the body that has to be here, you can't have the budget committee meeting or appropriations committee meeting and having sessions at the same time.
Right. No, it was strictly so that they would have an opportunity to meet potentially in the morning, depending on what they're able to get done today, and that we would all still be here for that.
Okay. So, but obviously we cannot, as a body, meet while the Appropriations Committee is meeting.
No, that's correct, obviously.
Right.
I think there's a way you can waive the rule and meet at the same time. But we haven't typically done that. I think the Budget Committee and the Budget Chairman and many of the Appropriations staff who have to work, once the Budget Committee gets done, literally will work all weekend trying to get things ready for next week. They want the most of the options.
But can you get us a definitive answer? I mean, if a technical session can be created to allow appropriations to meet, then the rest of the body can go home tomorrow?
Well, I would probably ask everybody that question. We're going to have a caucus after this, and that's certainly an appropriate time to figure out if that's a possibility. The other thing is, there's a lot of bills that take up time on calendar, and I know that people have various bills they're trying to get to. I know that that's been the subject of conversation this morning, and obviously we can't get to some of those things if we're not here. So, that's why I intended
to. But we can't go to them if appropriations is meeting, and if that's the purpose for being here, then
right.
It's
but
a conflict.
If we were here tomorrow, for a while after appropriations got finished meeting, they would give us more time to work through some of these bills that are in front of us, and that's certainly what we intend to do this afternoon. There's a variety of bills. You and I talked about a couple bills yesterday afternoon.
Right.
Those are the types of things we're trying to get to, some of those things. I heard you and the senator from Butler on the magic list. But a lot of the list, as we start getting down, some of the people who wanted a various Senate bill, that language now is on a House bill, which at this time of the year has a better chance of making it. So we're transitioning to where many of the members who had those ideas they wanted to talk about now have that language coming over from the House, and since you're one step closer, I talked to the senator from Clay about that yesterday on a different issue, but because of the time of the year that we're at, as you know, it's getting tougher to take a Senate bill out of this body right now and then getting it through the process at the House. So we're trying to find the pieces that people wanted as their kind of district priority and are important to them and see where it is on a House bill to give them a better chance of actually getting it done.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis, what purpose do you rise?
Can I inquire the senator from Butler?
Senator from Butler, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from St. Francis?
I do. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, so I gather from that conversation that we'll find out a little bit more here in caucus about what we will be doing tomorrow. My hope is that a technical can be set up. I feel sorry for the Appropriations Committee having to spend more time here than the general body in itself, but we can't discuss the budget tomorrow, bottom line, even if they got it done late tonight. So to keep the rest of the members here would be a concern if there's a way to keep that from happening.
You know, it's not just a matter of going home. It's a matter we have constituents we represent.
We do, and, you know, and we also have businesses to run.
Yeah, last Thursday I missed like the 25th anniversary of the Regional Planning Commission and stuff. Things like that. Might have been the 35th.
I mean, that's what we're up here for, is our constituents.
Stuff like that. You know, and then put uncomfortable position on some of the other senators had deference with that bill on the Thursday before Friday.
So very, and, very frustrating in that regard, and the consideration that we need to make. It's a little unprecedented to be going to Friday this early in session. If it would have been an opportunity to get to the budget, that's a rational conversation, and that's the reason why when I was asked earlier, you know, last week when we talked about it, it made sense. But we can't get to the budget as a body. So
I've been a proponent. You know, it takes 5 hours for some of my commissioners and mayors from the Boot Hill. And the Boot Hill is just as important part of the state as anywhere else.
Right.
And when they want to come up and meet with their senator on a Tuesday or Wednesday night and go out and visit, because you know a visit is not a real good visit trying to visit in one of these galleries on the side, or, hey, follow me, I'm going somewhere else. We work like we're in a panic. And I'm just telling you, when you're in a panic, you're going to make mistakes. And you're going to irritate people. And I could be one. It's a little bit irritated right now. And fact of the matter is, there's no reason that people and constituents, which is what we're doing up here, we're here to represent the folks back home. And I have been an advocate. This is my fifth year of trying to say on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we need to take an hour and a half off so we can do what we want to do so our constituents can sit down and have a one-on-one with their representative or senator from their district.
And I don't mind coming back after that dinner break, staying
That's
here
right.
at 10 or 12 o'clock. It's either here taking care of the state's business or sitting in front on our straddle lounger watching Fox News. Yeah. I mean, if we're going to be up here, I'd just soon be working. But
that's ridiculous. You know, last night I mentioned to you when we're headed for our little tent. I mentioned to you last night, I looked down at your clock and it said 8:48. And I said, I can't remember being able to finish with a meal by 9 o'clock. I'm here to tell you, I'm tired of it.
Well,
right? Because you don't lose any strategy. You don't lose anything. And it's bad for everybody, every member in their health. It's bad for our staff staying here all night on this stuff. And if you don't have a good plan, if you have a plan, that's different. But there was no plan the other night that I know to try to bring that bill to resolution. I wasn't aware of any. Because I may have something to do with you and I not being in the inner circle, maybe. But
seems to be a problem of communications, a lack of communication.
But, you know, so what if we take a break at 5:30 to 7 or 6 to 7:30? You know, that gives 30 minutes for senators that might be into a really good debate. But if everybody knows it ahead of time, then there's really no strategy to win or lose. But you know what? It's just on deaf ears. It's on deaf ears. You know what somebody told me the other day? Well, we're taking off for the softball game. How's that for your dinner break? Great. You know, that's great. But you asked some good questions there just a second ago of the majority floor leader. And we represent the folks that do not have a voice up here. We got all these lobbyists running around, camped out everywhere. We're going to be talking about that later on. We got all these guys camped. It's not about them people. It's about the people that do not have a voice up here, that can't take off work to come up here. We're here to represent their interest. And frankly, I am tired of it.
Well, it's very frustrating that if we start getting legislation processed and passed based upon what's going on in the halls as opposed to what's valuable and real is very, very frustrating. And I want to make one last comment before we finish here.
Go ahead.
Reading between the lines of the floor leader's comments, we probably won't be seeing SB 190. We're going to see a House bill with that language coming towards us.
You know, I don't care what the number is. I say bring it on. In fact, the matter is we're here to represent the folks that's having a hard enough time right now putting food on the table, getting health care. We're not here to represent multi-million-dollar overpaid executives and so on and so forth. Now, I don't want to use a lot of my stuff out of my red folder because there is a chapter or two in that. But we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, a lot more in-depth than anybody's heard me talk about on this Senate floor. It's not, you know, I'm known to be a warm and fuzzy guy. No, I really am.
Well, Senator, I think we're going to finish on that note right there so that the message is loud and clear.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guests. Senator from the 5th, why do you seek recognition?
To inquire the Senator from the 25th.
Senator from who?
25th. Yes, Senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 5th?
I do.
Senator from the 5th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, so I hear you often talk about those that are in your district who are indigent, you know, those that cannot really afford, you know, to survive.
It's not just people in my district, Senator. It's everybody in the state of Missouri and the country, actually.
So I'm sure you have been following this fight on the floor, and I just want to ask you where you are on that. You've been following this fight on the floor about doing away with the circuit breaker. Do you support the circuit breaker? Do you support the particular piece of legislation that we're working on now, or are you against that?
Senator, I'm going to give you the same answer, and I stay same all the time. I never tell somebody how I'm going to vote on something until it's time to ring the bell.
Let me rephrase it. Do you believe that those individuals that will be impacted within this particular piece of legislation, do you believe that that is fair? People in your district that will be impacted by the circuit breaker, do you believe what we're doing on this floor is good for your constituents,
Senator,
with the circuit breaker?
Everything we do on this floor is impactful to all of our citizens.
In a negative way.
All of them.
Do you think that this is impacted in a negative way?
Everything we do on this floor, Senator, impacts people.
So you cannot answer a direct question because you say you care about the poor all the time. And the circuit breaker, clearly, that is clearly an attack on the most vulnerable in the state of Missouri.
Okay. I'm going to give you the same answer I've given you every time we inquire. You and I have a different means of delivering the services. So you think the government delivers everything, and I don't. I think we deliver we should make things opportunity for people. You want to mandate everything.
Okay, so, but the circuit, do you have the circuit breaker paper on your? You're the third. Your constituents would be...
Number three, when it comes to the negative
impact of this particular piece of legislation.
Yeah,
Senate will come to order while the senators
the
are
The senator
in
from
the
11th don't have
senators,
to find your paperwork,
you may
Senator.
Proceed.
I've got a steel trap up here, even it's old. It's 6,000 or something.
Oh, it's 6,000.
Okay.
So, you would
live a lot longer if you keep your desk work cleaner.
Do you think the 6,000 in your district, do you think that they should be stripped from the circuit breaker?
Senator, I told you earlier, I've been listening to the debate.
Thank you, Senator.
No, thank you, Senator.
Introduction of guests, Senator from San Francisco.
To inquire the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from St. Francis?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. You know, I heard your passionate response on the managed care issue and the conversation. And can you talk a little bit about the adequacy network?
You're talking about the network adequacy.
Yes, the network.
Right. Now, you know, under federal law, the
The adequacy of the network has to be certified before care can be delivered.
Well, similar to a certificate of need?
No, this is not a certificate of need. That's a whole different thing. This is network adequacy. In other words...
That's why I'm asking. I want to understand.
Here's the thing. The managed care companies contract with hospitals and doctors and various providers to provide all of the care that they provide. And under federal law, the availability of care under Medicaid has to be substantially similar to the availability of care for the general person who's not on Medicaid. So they have to certify that the network is adequate to take care of all the people that they're contracting to take care of. That's called network adequacy. And so under the law, the Department of Insurance has to certify that the three managed care companies, I think they're Home State Health, which is Centene, United Healthcare, and WellCare, I think, are the three, that they have to certify that their networks are adequate. In other words, there's enough doctors and hospitals that have contracted that they can actually provide care for that amount that they get per member per month, and they have to certify that. So the Department of Insurance has to do it. Now, in committee, I asked, have they been certified? And the director said, no, the Department of Insurance will start doing that process a week before. So in other words, since there's 9 days, they'll start day after tomorrow, I guess. That would be a week before.
Right.
So now I got to ask this question. This is the most important question to ask. Does not the Department of Insurance take orders from the executive branch?
It's a good question.
I mean, does not the governor tell the Department of Insurance kind of what to do? Like, are they independent enough to say, your network's not adequate? Now, the last I heard, the information that I'm about to say, of course, it hasn't been updated for a few days, but they had not contracted with SSM Healthcare. And SSM sent me a letter saying, we're really concerned about this. They had not contracted with Cox, some of the health plans. Now, Cox is one of the two big hospital systems in Springfield, right?
Right.
I mean, if they haven't contracted with these people, there's a big problem. Big problem. So now the question is the Department of Insurance, which, by the way, takes its marching orders from the governor, independent enough of that person who wants this managed care very badly to make a fair determination on network adequacy?
And so if I'm following you here, that if SSM and if Cox has not been contracted, which are two of the largest provider of care in the state, then have they met the adequacy requirement for the network?
Right. Now, SSM is the largest provider of care in the state for moms and kids under managed care.
Wow. So how can they determine that the network adequacy has been achieved then?
I don't know. I mean, the question is, no matter what they say, are you going to believe it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, remember, once again, they work for the governor. And they're determining the network adequacy. And the governor wants this. And he's willing to let the contract take effect May the 1st, even though the appropriation won't be done until after, and even though we are planning to start the program knowing full well that we are going to force the managed care companies to renegotiate. And in fact, there's some information that they are willing. Like, of course, they're going to get $500 million. No, I think it's more like $2 billion line item.
Have we got the cart before the horse if the state insurance has not determined the network adequacy? Therefore, they cannot issue a statement to that effect.
Right. We have not got the network adequacy. We have not got the waiver from the federal government. We have not got the state plan amendment. We have not got the contracts approved. In fact, we haven't even renegotiated them, and the budget's based on them. And we do not have an appropriation to pay for it yet, but yet we're going to take 250,000 people in Missouri and put them on managed care in 9 days from now. Yeah, we've got the cart before the horse.
Very good, Senator. I appreciate the information. I think this is what we've got to shed the light on in this particular issue, is that we are not following proper procedures, and it began last year through the appropriations process.
Oh, 2 years ago, actually. The Senator, you said that as far as Senate Bill 190 goes, it appears to you that we're not going to take that one up again?
Oh, it's going to become a House bill, I'm sure. I think I have the House bill number. Just a second. I have that House bill number here somewhere.
You know, that matters.
House Bill 616.
Well, now, let me ask you that. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I just don't know what our caucus priorities are. Do you know what our caucus priorities are?
No, I didn't think this one was. I don't ever really remember making this a conversation during our caucus meeting that this is a priority.
Is it a caucus priority for us to help Ameren?
I would hope not. That, you know, when we start catering to a billion-dollar industry that has deep pockets that have doled out quite a few.
And their stock is going up.
And their stock's going
up. And they
pay
their head guy
margins.
Like $6, $8 million a year or something
you
like
know,
that.
You know, I ever member in this body and even in the statewide offices need to evaluate Ameren's influence right now.
Is it a caucus priority for us to help Centene, United Healthcare, WellCare? Is that a caucus priority?
Our caucus priority should be to make sure we have the best available care to our citizens, but it should not be narrowed down to major corporations where the president CEO is making $22 million a year.
$22 million a year. Is it a caucus priority, you know, to help other various entities like the Chamber of Commerce?
No, we should be about the entire state and how it affects the state as a balance.
I agree. I totally agree, Senator. And so I just don't know what our caucus priorities are. Like, let me ask you this. Should it be a caucus priority for us to talk about ethics?
It should be a caucus priority because that's the thing that our constituency has asked the most about, is the ethics of our state legislative body. Without the confidence in our body, we lose a lot of opportunity to really serve.
Didn't our governor run on a platform of that he's going to pass a gift ban and a revolving door ban and different things like that?
That was a campaign trail, yes.
Do you think that the people of Missouri care about dark money being spent on campaigns?
I think that's the one they're most concerned about. Where is those dollars coming from? How are they being spent? And because they are a C4, that's hidden from them. That's hidden from us. I mean, that is very frustrating when that is what is dominating our campaign programs right
now.
You know,
I'd like to see us focus on that, for one thing, but we're not doing it. But
that, to me, should be a priority, C4s.
Well, you know, I appreciate the discussion, and thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the inquiry and the information. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction to guests. Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you rise?
President, I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 3rd, if I could.
Senator from the
3rd.
Third. Senator from St. Francis, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 11th?
Yes, Mr. President, I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
You're welcome, Senator.
I heard you talk about Circuit Breaker a little bit earlier and the faith out of the program and all that, and obviously you and I haven't talked about this beforehand, so at any time if you'd like to end this, just let me know. But I wanted to kind of explain to you where I felt that we could fix this problem.
And if I misspoke earlier about a probability of a compromise of cutting the program in half and then phasing it out over 5 years was on the table.
Please
correct me on that. But I think something like that is a legitimate offer and legitimate consideration that this body ought to be discussing.
Sure. No, I'm not taking any problem with that. I just wanted to explain to you something that I had come up with the other night.
Well, please do.
Because I feel like if we're going to end this here, and then they're going to go into a committee room and they're going to slash a budget because we can't pass Circuit Breaker or there's no deal or whatever else, I want people to know that there is a reasonable solution that we came up with the other night.
I think this is a great opportunity because a lot of us would like to know some of the conversations that have taken place on this and what's on the table.
Sure. So just if you give me a second just to just follow with me, and if you have any questions or whatever, just pipe up and we'll go and I'll answer them one at a time. So do you remember a few years ago when we did Senate Bill 19, which was the corporate tax double, they were getting double taxed.
Correct.
And we brought all the rest of them in, and I believe the senator from the 8th says it's got a $24 million fiscal note. But we have other people, Missouri Budget Project, and other people who think that it's actually cost the state almost $200 million.
Senator, I'm having a hard time hearing. Mr. President, it's a little noisy.
Senate will come to order if you will take your conversations to the side galleries or to the rear of the chamber. Senators, you may proceed.
So back to the Senate Bill 19 from a couple years ago, some people think that it's gotten to a couple $100 million, right?
Okay.
And the problem with how we're tracking it is that we just eliminated the tax, right? So they're not being double taxed anymore. So right. We don't know exactly how much it is. Senator from the 8th is firm that he believes, from what I understand, that it's only $24 million. Others, like I said, think it's gotten close to $200 million. So my idea was to, instead of getting rid of the tax, we make it into a tax credit to where we can track it. Immediately cap that tax credit at $25 million, which would cover what the senator from the 8th believes they're already taken.
Okay.
So that would be your first pool of money that the tax credit would do. It's capped immediately. The second portion of that, $55 million, which would be the circuit breaker, would go in to fix the circuit breaker.
Okay.
So after that, everything would resume normal to the tax, to the corporations and everything else. If I'm right, if the Missouri Budget Project's right, and they are actually costing us $200 million, we have funded the circuit breaker by reining in a corporate tax giveaway that was never supposed to be that much to begin with. The fiscal note, at the beginning, by the way, was $12 million. We're already admitting that it's $24 million now. So, if we did this with the amendment that I have, like I said, we keep the $24 million tax break, which is already $12 million over what we thought it was going to be. We pay for circuit breaker if it gets up to $75 or $80 million. And we're not going into the budget, we're not going into the appropriations committee and slashing things here and there. The false choice of, if we don't do circuit breaker, other bad things are going to get cut, other bad things are going to happen, is not acceptable.
Is that the threat that's being thrown out?
No, but I mean, I think that if the circuit breaker doesn't pass, it's only logical other things are going to get cut. This amendment allows for none of that to happen.
It creates a magnifying glass on the issue to make sure that we know exactly what the cost factors are.
This does what everybody in this room campaigned on. You rein in a corporate tax giveaway that's gotten out of control to give to disabled senior citizens. It doesn't get better than that. That's not some left-wing liberal idea from a Democrat. That's not some crazy fringe idea. It's literally gotten into the hundreds of millions of dollars. And if the senator from the 8th says no, it hasn't, then he wins. Then guess what? They keep going with they get their $24 million if he's right, and then we're good. And you know what? Circuit breaker gets cut, and everybody goes home happy. I'm betting that that's wrong. I'm betting that it's getting closer to the $200 million mark, and we can fix all of it. But it's not going to be offered. I don't know. I mean, I don't think the bill's going to come up. I think they're going to go in there, and they're going to make a lot of drastic cuts. And then they're going to parade out, and they're going to say, this was in-home, this was one senior service versus another senior service. Our hands were tied. There was nothing we could do.
Well,
there is something they could have done.
The one thing I want to say is that I supported the corporate tax cut. I think it's important.
I voted for it at $12 million myself.
And I believe in it. But I also have a great concern that my district, as you guys brought up on the floor when we were having this conversation,
has one of the highest numbers of folks taking advantage, or I hate to use that word, not taking advantage, but are successfully using the circuit breaker program to be able to survive in their home. So, you know, I obviously have to balance this, and I think it's a program. That's the reason why I would support, you know, a phase of some sort or a minor cut instead of just coming to the cliff and totally cutting it off. We need to be able to logistically and logically discuss a succession planning, and that's what all good businesses do. They have a succession plan. They don't just abruptly end something. It's just not, well, I guess sometimes they do, but it's not very effective. The most effective way is to have some type of succession plan.
Sure. And Senator, I honestly just wanted to make sure that if this is not going to be able to be brought up today or on another bill or anything else, that people out there realize that there were options.
No, I appreciate
that there were logical
that
options, whether it's your phase out, whether it's this, there were logical options, and we could have taken, reined in a corporate tax giveaway that's gotten way out of control for disabled senior citizens, and we're deciding not to. We're choosing not to. That's what this body believes in. We're deciding not to. And I would love to say to the Senator from Buchanan, I am a huge fan of the Watchmen. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 7th?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator, for taking my inquiry. We're going to break here in a minute, and then I think you guys are going to caucus. But at some point in time, we're going to be back down in this budget room discussing.
That was the plan.
That's the plan. And one of the things that we talked about was what are some options that we could potentially have. One of the things that I made clear that I was willing to compromise on or wanted to compromise on was to take that circuit breaker, and instead of having a cliff where we just remove it completely, we phase it out and cut it in half and then cut it in half until it's gone, maybe it's over a three-year period. What happened to that idea, and why is that not possible?
Well, I think one of the problems, and I was in some of the negotiations, I was not involved in, but what we're trying to avoid is a trip back to the House. It's difficult to book money if you pass something different than the House has done, and we don't know they're going to take it up. Pretty much the same situation we're in right now.
Okay, so we don't know if they're going to take it up, but if we offered them, right now we're offering them zero in return. If we offer them $25 million in return, and again, I think that the House is the one who constructed the box that we're in right now, because they wrote the check before they had the funds in the account to write the check. So what I'm saying is if we're willing to go, well, right now you're at zero funds because this legislation is not moving forward, but we can amend the legislation and we can phase it out and we can put $25 million of that money into the budget so that we don't have to, you know, make other cuts. Why wouldn't we at least try to do that? Why isn't that something that we should at least attempt to see if they'd be willing to take half a loaf?
We tried to do a lot of stuff last night into the evening rather than going out to dinner and doing things like that, and it didn't come to fruition. So that means that you don't book the money. And, I mean, we're down to the point that we got to get a budget done, get a budget out of committee. And so, you know, the comment was made we had other choices. We probably did a month ago. We don't have a whole lot of choices right now.
So let me ask you this. We're going to find out when we get into the budget hearing when we return to start closing these items out. Do you intend to revisit closed items that you have already closed?
You know, that's one possibility. We can go back and start from scratch and reopen everything, but I have a couple places I can get the majority of the money, and it's not going to be pretty, and that's probably where we're going to go.
Since I'm on the probes, could you give me an insight into where you think the $50 million is now going to come from?
Probably will come from funding a foundation formula and transportation.
Okay, so those are the two. So the House sent over...
We don't have a lot of choices.
Okay, so the House sent over a plan that fully funded the formula, which was $40 million more than what we had in the closed item. And then they funded transportation at 16%. you increased that 16% to 21%, which is approximately $25 million.
Right.
So what you're saying is that perhaps when this is done, we lose the $40 million on funding the formula and we lose the $25 million that you put in transportation. Is that where you think it's going to come from?
Part of it.
Part of it. Okay. Well, again, I will just say for all those who are listening and interested in this that, you know, offering the House $25 million back on the circuit breaker and then having a plan on phasing it out so it's not just a cliff is what I want to do. And I'll probably bring it up in the budget committee when we start making these cuts, just as a point of saying we could try to do this. We're choosing as a chamber not to put it back to the House. I think that's, you know, that's the wrong way to do it. We should at least try. And if they say no, then okay. But we should at least give them that option.
But if they say no, how do we go back and fix the budget?
Well, I mean, truthfully, I think that when the House sent the budget over the first time with that $52 million or the $50 million out of it on a bill that hadn't passed, that's at the time the Senate should have said, we're not going to include that $50 million in our budget. That's what I felt like we should have done. And then if we pass the circuit breaker, then we could have done a supplemental or a capital improvement or something else with the new found money, as opposed to accepting the box that the House built. We jumped into the box, and now because of that,
I disagree with you on that. That is the budget they give us. We're not in the box. We don't have to be in the box. We're obviously not in the box because we're not going with them on two very important items to a lot of people, educational
issues. Well, and you know what, Senator? I think that this is an opportunity, and I'm going to listen to what your vision is, but this is the time where we show leadership. And we say that, look, okay, we're not, this is what it is. We don't have the $50 million. We're going to take it from other places. We're going to decide the priorities of the spending for our side of it. I know it's going to go to conference. But in conference, without that circuit breaker passing, they're going to have to figure out where that $50 million is going to come from. Isn't that correct?
And I can assure you it's probably going to come from our members that have put things in the budget.
That's fine. That's fine. So it's it'll be interesting to hear the conversation. I just wanted to go on the record and say that there was I offered to sit down on the circuit breaker if we would just cut it in half and phase it out as opposed to just taking it all at once. And that's been $25 million. So when we get into this process of cutting, I just want to go on the record to say that $25 million could have been restored if we just would have sent it back over to the House.
Understood.
All right. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
So I was listening to your exchange with the Senator from Phelps. And the way I see this is, or it's kind of made clear by your interaction, the House has booked a savings of $52 million by eliminating the circuit breaker, right?
They booked savings on a program that exists that they had forecasted to be eliminated, which now is not going to be eliminated.
Right, but the House position is that we booked the savings. So if the Senate position is that we don't book any savings, between now and the time we go to conference, if we pass a bill that says that it's phased out and we can book $25 million worth of savings,
right,
we can go to conference and then, you know, we can go ahead and take that $25 million in conference. So what the senator from Phelps said is that he's planning to take out the things that we want.
Right.
But you understand that if we put something in that we want and it's not in the House position and he takes it out, you might be able to book that savings, but you can't get back what you want because there's no differences. You would have to vote to exceed the differences.
Right.
So the thing about it is it's kind of important if you want what you want And if it is important to you, and you can get the $26 million or whatever, it's important that we go ahead and book $26 million of savings. I mean, otherwise...
Why, if those folks out there want to eliminate the renter portion of the circuit breaker, if that's their goal, and I'm saying that I will sit down on doing that, but we're going to do it responsibly, why wouldn't they take that deal as opposed to saying, I'm taking my ball and going home. If I can't have the whole loaf, I'm not taking any of the slices.
Well, you know, half a loaf is better than no loaf at all. I think it was James Madison said that. I'm not for sure. I think it was Madison. But anyway, they should. I mean, the point being that this doesn't just affect your members. This also affects Republican members, too.
Well, it shouldn't be about that at all. We shouldn't have partisanship be a part of how we conduct our legislative business.
Now, remember, even if the senator from Phelps manages to get the committee reports, you know, and say we take all of these things out, we still have it come back to the floor for discussion, and we can amend the Senate bills. So there's time here. I mean, right. This isn't the kind of thing that we have to decide today.
Here's the thing. Here's the danger of focusing and targeting members of the Senate's priorities in the budget. Typically, members of appropriation will go with the chairman because they did a lot of work in the forefront to get something done, and then they come out here and they don't support amendments to the budget. Typically, we do not amend the budget on the Senate floor.
Yeah, but this is a different animal.
I agree.
This is changing the way we do business.
I agree.
It has to. It absolutely has to, because if he wants that circuit breaker reduction and you do manage to drive that compromise to phase it out, then that means that the law has changed and we truly would need to adjust up our budget. And the process is that if that happens and those bills are on the floor, we are going to have to have that discussion.
Well, I anticipate if today's budget hearings is about targeting members of this chamber's priorities in that budget, you will see amendments on this floor when the time comes.
Well, you will have to. And the only way you're going to be able to pay for them is a negotiation on that circuit breaker. I mean, we got a $26 billion budget, and this is coming down to $26 million, which is like what? A million times 1,000 is a billion. 1,000th. Of the budget, or 0.1%, you know? I mean, we're not talking about a whole lot. It's almost a rounding error, you would think.
Well, again, I think that I believe that the Senate should be about compromise. It should be about finding solutions to complicated problems. I have offered a compromise that I am willing to support. I have no idea if the other senators are willing to support it, but I'm willing to support it. Phase out the renter's portion of the circuit breaker, not because it's the right thing to do, but because if it's going to be done, it should be done responsibly.
Well, you know, for me, there's a contrast. There's Michael Neidorff sitting over here earning $22 million, and there's the typical senior citizen sitting over here having trouble making their ends meet. And do I want to take money from the little typical senior citizen and give it to Michael Neidorff so he can buy his granddaughter a pony? No, I don't want to do that. I do not want to pass this circuit breaker thing and throw all those people under the bus for the benefit of this managed care contract. That's what this boils down to for me. And this is gross. It's disgusting.
Well, Senator, you know, we came in at 8:30 this morning in hopes that we were going to find a path forward. I am now anticipating that path to exist in a wildly different way than what I had hoped.
There still is a path, Senator. There still is a path. It may take a little time. It may be a winding road, but you can still get to where you want to go. And, you know, I told the budget chair that there are certain tax credits that we could eliminate that total $12 million, and we can do that with just a resolution of the committee. You might want to help me with that. And we can do that in committee.
I will certainly be willing to discuss all options.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways of getting there.
All
so,
right.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guests. Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire, Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Phelps?
I do.
You know, you made the implication I'm going to take all of the member stuff out of the opposite party as we go through the budget. If you will remember, when we were going through the budget lines to start with, I specifically put a lot of things they asked for in the budget and closed that line. That line will stay in the budget as it leaves the Senate. However, since there's going to be a loss of $52 million, unless I can magically come up with some, which I've found some, not $52 million worth, their lines are protected now. So don't bring that up on the floor.
Oh, no, Senator, I think you misheard me. What I said
no, I did not mishear you.
I mean, what I said to him was that it isn't just only Democrat items, it's also Republican items.
And I closed those lines
and,
with
and I
their
appreciate
ask,
that,
so it goes to conference.
Right,
I did
it
that
goes to
for
conference.
A reason.
And what I'm saying to the senator is, if it goes to conference and we don't have the money,
it
in conference they may be removed. And I'm telling the senator from the 7th.
I made that very clear in the budget process.
I'm telling him there's still hope for us to get this money out of the circuit breaker if we can do a halfway thing. That's what I'm telling him. I'm not saying that you didn't do the right thing, Senator.
Well, that is not how I took it.
Well, I know, and I want to make sure that you
go through this.
I know you closed those items.
Yeah.
But it's in conference where they're at risk. And we have time. We have time to go.
Buying time.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Right.
Okay.
And we're in agreement, Senator. I'm not being critical.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of guest. Introduction of guest. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Senator from Andrew, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, for announcements.
You may proceed.
Mr. President, I want to announce that the majority, Republican Majority Caucus will meet immediately upon adjournment in the Senate lounge.
Thank you, Senator. Announcements. Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.
Senator from Cole moves that the Senate stand in recess till 3 p.m. this day. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess till 3 p.m. this day.